Welcome back. My guest today has been on several times. Back in the day when he first used to be a geologist in the 1970s. I bet he hasn't heard that introduction for a while. And then he decided what the world needed was more lawyers to fight the rationality and regulatory takings, property rights, liberty. Jim Burling is now the vice president for legal affairs. He wrote a book. He's been before the Supreme Court for the Pacific Legal Foundation. He wrote a book, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis, Why So Much of America is Now Unlivable. Welcome back to Radio Real Estate, Jim Burling.
Hey, it's great to be with you again, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, you're vice president of legal affairs. Shouldn't it be vice president of illegal affairs? Because if it's legal, there's no need for lawyers.
We try to make things legal. So that's why I'm vice president for legal affairs. Yeah, enough people are out there trying to do things illegally. So we try to bring them to court and make them go legal again.
That sounds good. Now, I'm not sure where you're based. Where are you at right now?
Well, we're based in Sacramento, but right now I am on the East Coast in New Jersey on a family reunion vacation.
Well, good for you. Thanks for taking time away from your family to call in and discuss your new book. I went to a dysfunctional family reunion, and you brought a side dish and an unresolved issue.
Well, fortunately, my family gets along fairly well as a family can. So it's really nice. We're visiting an area where I grew up in my summers in the Jersey Shore, and it's totally unlike the television show. We actually get along, and we're not crude and lewd like they were in that program.
You're going to Atlantic City?
No, I'm not, although I saw Atlantic City from the morning. I'm in Lummich Island, and if you bicycle to the end of the island, like I did this morning, you can see Atlantic City from a distance, and I like to keep it that way, a distance.
Very good. Very good. Well, I thought your book was going to be How to Sue Your Annoying Neighbor, but you had another idea, and you wrote this book. You've been with your property rights attorney for 40 years. Vice President Legal Affairs, Pacific Legal Foundation, and you trace the missteps and misguided policies that have led to the current housing predicament, starting going back to urban renewal of the 1950s. And you also, in this book, propose a viable solution. So, yeah, where do we start? A century's worth of interference with property rights is the root cause of our housing crisis?
Right. I mean, that's the point of the book. And these are things I learned over 40 years of litigation. And the root causes of our housing crisis today is just one failed government policy after another. And that includes excessive zoning. It includes excessive environmental regulation. It includes urban renewal. All these things that have done to destroy property rights of owners, the ability to use their property as they see fit without undue governmental interference. And all the impediments, it's rent control is another one, all these impediments on the ability to use property in a reasonable way have created a terrible disincentive to building new supply of housing. And so the law of supply and demand is inexorable. You can't overturn it. North Korea, Venezuela, and not even the California legislature has figured out a way to overturn the law of supply and demand. So we're not building the supply we need to meet demand. So what happens? Economists will tell you, economy 101, prices go up and prices continue to go up and up and up and up because supply isn't even catching up to the demand.
I remember years ago, my guest Jim Burling, a veteran attorney for the Pacific Legal Foundation, and his new book, Nowhere to Live, Hidden Story of America's Crisis. I remember one of the first economic conferences was at UCSB, and he said, you can't build our way out of this problem. Now, California right now with, you know, dictating to local municipalities and, you know, contractors' ability to build, they're trying to build their way out of this problem. I don't know if it's going to work. They're getting a lot of resistance. How would you react to an economist who says you can't build your way out of a problem? Because are you implying in a way that if we had less regulation, we could?
I certainly am implying that. Because when they talk about trying to force people to build, they're trying to force you to build affordable housing. You're trying to build affordable housing where it doesn't make sense. All these government mandates are just counterproductive in a lot of ways. For example, we have something in California, especially a few other states are starting to do this, called so-called inclusionary zoning, which means if you build 10 or 20 units of housing, that you have to set aside 10, 15, sometimes 20% as subsidized affordable housing. What that means is that people buying the other units, the non-affordable ones, if you will, the market rate ones, they have to pay a substantial amount of money more to subsidize the others, which raises prices, which makes things unaffordable. It also creates a disincentive for building new homes. And with that disincentive out there, we have fewer homes being built. Now, the economist that told you that you can't build your way out of the supply, he may have been saying that we have to do so much building, it's just not possible. Well, you have to start somewhere, and you have to start by letting the market and people who own property to develop homes where people want to live. And that's what's being stymied now. So, you know, I do disagree with him, this basic premise that you can't build your way out of a shortage of houses. There's no other way of doing it other than building. You may need more in some cases, but certainly that at that minimum, what you need to is to allow more supply.
Well, one example is that up in the vicinity of Sacramento where you're based, is that those billionaires who bought hundreds of thousands of acres wanting to build a new town. And somehow you would think everybody would say, well, this is a great idea, but they're having trouble. I mean, so there's an example where you could build it.
No, everybody thinks it's a great idea, just not anywhere near me. It's the old, you know, build anywhere but where I am. The old NIMBY, not in my backyard, or some people would say more appropriately, not on planet Earth, the NOPERS. But yeah, it's a great idea to build lots of homes, but just do it somewhere else. And that kind of attitude is so pervasive, and it is facilitated by bad government policies, that things just don't get built anywhere. I mean, in my book, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Housing Crisis, I talk about projects where people have been trying to build homes in Southern California in a very large area, not unlike the ones outside of Sacramento. And they've been stymied by one lawsuit after another after another. They've agreed to give away a couple hundred thousand acres of land for conservation easements, but they still get repeatedly sued. One suit's over and another suit's brought. And it's, like I said, it's been about 20 years that they've been trying to build. I also, in my book, Nowhere to Live, I talk about individuals. One went through almost 20 years of trying to build on a small lot up in Priest Lake, Idaho, because the EPA said it was a wetland, turned out not to be a wetland subject to federal jurisdiction after almost 20 years of litigation. And I go in example after example in my book, Nowhere to Live, of these horror stories of people not being able to build homes. So, yeah, build homes, but just don't build them anywhere near me is the common, all too common attitude.
My guest, Jim Burling, Pacific Legal Foundation, Vice President for Legal Affairs, not Illegal Affairs, and his book, new book, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis. I had a guy on not too long ago who built about 130 homes, maybe east of Palm Springs or west of Palm Springs. And instead of selling them, he's renting them out. It's kind of a new thing, I guess. I don't know if you're familiar with that. At least it's, it's building.
Yeah, it's build to rent. It's build to rent. And it's because housing has become so unaffordable for so many people that people looking in the home building industry realize that, well, they can make a profit if they build homes and rent them out. I don't think that's an ideal end. I mean, it's nice that at least some capital is being directed into home building. Ideally, it would go into home building that people could buy. But so long as our market is so distorted as it is right now, with the disparity between supply and demand, you're going to have things like that, people building entire little villages of rental housing. Ideally, we would have the market that would allow all kinds of housing to be built, rental housing, housing to purchase, housing to lease, all kinds of different options. But economically, we're being really cornered into these little tight areas, niche markets, if you will, that where everybody else is simply looking, I can't afford to buy a house. And that's true in large parts of the country right now.
You couldn't shout that louder. My guest, Jim Burling, Pacific Legal Foundation, was discussing his new book, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis. Recently, they converted some hotels. Dan Walters was on up in the San Francisco area. And these were rooms for maybe homeless people, just a room. And the cost to rehab was $500,000 per room. No kitchen. And he said, you might as well, you can go to single family homes for $500,000. You just buy them a home. So it's kind of, expensive.
I mean, government is absolutely terrible at creating housing itself or rehabbing housing. They don't plan it very well. They don't build it very well. They don't maintain it very well. As I talk about in my book, the one thing government can do is tear these things down or blow them up when they fail. But $500,000 for a room is nothing. I have a picture in my book of a housing project north of San Francisco where it's $1 million per affordable housing unit. $1 million. And I mean, it boggles the mind and the policies behind that. We have in California something called the Housing First Initiative, where the idea is to get the homeless into a house, but don't require them to have any conditions such as getting rehab or treatment for an illness, mental illness that they might have. Simply put people into a house. And the idea is that, well, you take them off the streets, they have a better life and they live longer. But in fact, people are dying at great rates inside these housing first units because nobody's there to give them Narcan when they take too much of heroin.
And why don't you think they don't have some basic parameters? Say, okay, we're going to give you this place to live, but we want you to, if you're an alcoholic, we want you to go to AA. If you're a drug addict, we want you to do this. What prevents them from mandating that or requiring that?
So the theory is, and I think it's, nuts, but the theory is that if you have any requirement for somebody to go through training or through treatment of any kind, then they won't take you up on the offer to move into a house and they will remain on the street. And also, it is a assault on their dignity of the individual to require them to do something they might not want to do. Well, my response to that is, it's an assault on their dignity not to try to require them to get fixed and to get better. Because people are not living up to their potential if they're strung out on drugs on the street where treatment might possibly help them in some way.
Yeah, I mean, if this person was on the street and their arm was infected, wouldn't you insist that they go to a doctor to get it treated? Or would you let them move in with an infected arm that would then have to be amputated or kill them? I mean, I don't know, what the difference is. It certainly would treat a medical condition like that.
Yeah, sometimes charity can be very misguided, especially as in our state, the government-mandated charity and the requirements that we have. But you look at our laws, and they talk about so-called evidence-based housing first, but the evidence is very, very weak that this is the best thing for people living on the streets. It's pretty much non-existent. And so it's just the idea that you have this mindset of, what we know is best, and that is that we don't interfere with people's lives at all and give them a place to live, but don't require them to get better, to fix that infected arm or to go through some, mental counseling for a mental illness. We've all seen too many people on the streets in California who severely need medical intervention to help fix their problems. But we just don't do that anymore. I have an entire section of my book devoted to how we have failed to treat the mentally ill in a compassionate way. I mean, I talk about the fact that in the 70s, when I was an undergraduate, I did a lot of volunteer work at a big state mental institution in upstate New York. And in 1976, all the patients began to tell me, oh, I'm going to a halfway house. Jim, I'm going to a halfway house. And great. And I'd say, how long? And they'd always tell me, 6 months, 6 months, 6 months. And after that, I asked them, well, where are you going after that? They had no idea. Nobody did. And what we know, of course, is that they went out onto the streets, into the jails, and were not treated anymore. And it was a terrible disservice to the mentally ill not to give them some kind of care. Whereas before, perhaps the big institutions, the warehousing of the mentally ill may not have been very good either. But this alternative is pretty horrible. And so we have people living on the streets that in the old days might have been able to live in a single-room occupancy hotel, might have been able to be in some kind of institutionalized setting other than a jail or a prison, and they might have had some hope. But what we've done with our housing policies and our treatment for the mentally ill is take away from them a lot of hope.
Oh, you know, CEQA, we're in California, you know, sometimes they're kind of trying to dial back on some of the regulations to allow more building. My guest, Jim Burling, attorney with Pacific Legal Foundation, we're talking about his new book, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis. So what solutions do you see if they put you in charge and crowned you the king of California or America? What would you do?
Well, first of all, I would have local communities look long and hard at their current zoning and ask the question, does this zoning exclude working class people? Does it exclude new families just starting out? And in many situations, it is yes, and therefore there should be a little more density in zoning, and I'm not talking about 80-story apartment buildings in the suburb, but things like triplexes, duplexes, granny flats, things like that could make a significant difference in a lot of communities. I also talk about the need to reform our environmental laws. We've taken vast areas of land off limits for housing because of wetlands or endangered species, and we need to look again at those policies and have some balance to consider the needs of the human population as well. We need to stop the endless cycle of litigation, especially under in California, the California Environmental Quality Act, where anybody can sue to stop a project. And if you succeed, the project gets stopped for a few years. People spend lots more money for a new environmental impact statement or environmental impact report. And then they get sued again and again and again. And we really need to put a stop to that. There have been, as you mentioned, some reforms in CEQA, but they don't go nearly far enough, and they're just for very limited circumstances. We need to make building of a reasonable number of homes something that is an automatic approval by the local planning department and building department, rather than something that requires a great deal of discretion, which requires then the environmental impact reports and facilitates all kinds of lawsuits by not in my backyard types. So there are all kinds of things we can do. We can wean our way away from rent control, which is one of the biggest disincentives for building new rental housing in a lot of cities across the country. We need to stop eminent domain abuse where it still exists. So there's lots that we can do. But bottom line of all the things I just talked about is we need to free up the market to allow people to build on their own property, the homes that people want to live in, where they want to live in them.
Right. And I know we have, there's a thing called like a builder's remedy. And of course, you know, NIMBY, you're not in my backyard. So people are afraid of having, like you joked about a 8-story building in a suburban area. But that new city that they want to build, it seems like people get exactly what they want, and you're not really impacting, you're not infill, you're not, are they going to be able to succeed with that project? What's it? I can't remember.
No, that's 64 million or maybe $6.4 billion question, because it seems like a project that we desperately need to provide housing for people. This is a project, for people that aren't familiar, near Travis Air Force Base between Sacramento and San Francisco. And some what's pretty much now ranch land and farmland, but underutilized. It could be used for housing. The people supporting the project have dialed back a little bit and reassessing after the county initiated a report that was rather critical of it. I think they're going to try to do something, but what they end up doing is probably going to be substantially less than they envision. If the example of what I talked about earlier in Southern California is, holds to this one as well, just these very large projects draw a lot of opposition. And as sure as night follows day, they will be sued the minute they have something proposed and on the table, and they will be sued again, and they will be sued again, and then again. And I could continue with agains for the rest of the time we're on. But it's distressing to know that the project is going to be looked at. It should be looked at carefully to make sure it's done the right way, but not sued to stop it. Instead, government should be trying to say, hey, how can we make this the best project possible to provide housing that we so desperately need for a lot of people?
Excellent recap. Jim Burling, a veteran attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. He's been before the Supreme Court. And I don't know, you've been 40 years, you say, you've been practicing?
Almost 41, but yes, okay. About that long, dealing with property rights and environmental regulations.
And his new book, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis. And do people, should they go to the pacificlegal.org website, or how does one buy this book?
Well, one could go to nowheretolive.org, a special website we set up for the book, or just go to Amazon. Type in Nowhere to Live and my name, James Burling, or a combination thereof, and Amazon will have the book available for you to buy the hardcover, which is, a nice cover, or do it in Kindle and read it on your tablet.
So, and what's the big books, Borders? Are they still, I seem to hear commercials and they go, go to Amazon or Borders. Are they still doing this?
I haven't seen any Borders around anywhere where I live. Maybe. Most of them went by the wayside. But Barnes & Noble, they should be able to, if you go to Barnes & Noble, if they don't have it, you should be able to order it from them.
You know what? Maybe that's what I meant. Barnes & Noble sounds more familiar to me. Barnes & Noble, Amazon, or you have your own website, nowheretolive.org.
That's correct. It's from a major publisher, Skyhorse Books, which is a imprint of Simon & Schuster. So any bookstore should be able to find it and order it.
Okay. The author, James Burling, and the title, Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis. Sounds like a great read, and enjoy the rest of your vacation. If you have time, drive an hour or so up to Mount Vernon, New York, and go to Johnny's Pizza on Grambling Avenue. You get the best pizza on the East Coast.
I will keep that recommendation in mind.
All right, Jim. Thanks. Thanks so much for taking time. Good to talk to you.
Hey, my pleasure to be with you.
All right. Bye for now. Bye for now. There you go. Jim Burling. Nowhere to Live, The Hidden Story of America's Crisis. You can go to nowheretolive.org or Barnes & Noble or Amazon, wherever you want to spend your money. You're listening to Mark Schneidman's Radio Real Estate, radiorealestate.com. Stay tuned. You'll be right back.